Are you ready to create a balanced, joyful life, rich in purpose and meaning? Do you long for a deeper connection with what you're doing, who you really are? Creating a Spirited Life with host Janet Kesenek explores the everyday experiences and encounters that puzzle and enlighten us. Guided by new ideas, perspectives, and at times humor, you'll create the harmonious, spirited life you're meant to live. Part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, Creating a Spirited Life will enrich your experience and ease your way through this work in progress we call life.
Welcome to Creating a Spirited Life. I'm your host, Janet Kesenek, and you're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio network broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Boston. This show is heard live every third Sunday of the month at 8 p.m. You can also tune into this show on our internet station, Dream Vision 7 Radio, weekly on Thursdays at 4 p.m. and 4 a.m. Eastern Time. To learn more and for a full station schedule, go to dreamvision7.com. Well, thanks for joining the conversation today on Creating a Spirited Life, where we bring together our thoughts, questions, and perspectives on a variety of topics and issues that help us discover the meaning, purpose, and joy that comes from creating and living a spirited life. Please be in touch, listeners, with your thoughts, comments, and questions through my website, spiralenergies.com, or like my Facebook page, Creating a Spirited Life, where you'll see regular Wednesday's wisdoms postings and other things of interest and announcements. Just go to facebook.com/creatingaspiritedlife. Well, welcome. We are beginning our show today, and the topic is The Consumer Has a Soul, the Whole Person in the Marketplace. My conversation guest today is Tracy Carlson. Tracy is the founder and principal of Right Brain Brands. She's a seasoned market strategist, speaker, and advisor who helps companies develop brands that people care about and that inspire loyalty. Tracy has led some of America's best-known brands, including Dove, Hellmann's, and Whisk, and consulted to many more, including General Mills, Rubbermaid, and Pepsi, and has extensive experience advising startups and small businesses as well. Tracy's non-traditional background combines equal parts Wharton MBA and unrepentant Yale humanities geek, she says. This hybrid experience, integrating human-centered right-brain thinking with left-brain analysis and metrics, forms the basis for her new book, What Great Brands Know, Unleash Your Right Brain Genius to Stand Out and Make Customers Care. Tracy, welcome, and thank you for joining our conversation today on Creating a Spirited Life.
Thank you so much, Janet. I'm delighted to be here.
No, it's just great. You know, the interesting thing around, our show is about creating a spirited life, and so often we're talking about the internal self, our relationship with ourself, our relationship with others, how we act, you know, in our work, in our jobs and such. But, you know, we want to approach everything in our life from a spirited, holistic place. And that even includes our buying and selling. And that's kind of what prompted the thought for this show today.
Great. I think it's a wonderful topic, and I think it's very apropos for the times that we live in as well. I think people are really searching to express more of themselves, whether it's as employees or as consumers or just general beings in the world.
Right, right. Well, you know, if we're trying to be a spiritual being, then that includes everything. And using our financial resources is an important place for our consciousness. And so we're all out there buying and consuming all the time. And so bringing some more consciousness to that just seems very important to me, because it can become a somewhat conscious-less experience if we're not careful. Do you feel that's true?
Yes, I do. I think that consumers are often operating on autopilot because we're so time-stressed, and just simply repeating what we always do can seem efficient. But there are times when we can actually feel a sense of energy and wholeness when we patronize brands or companies that we actually care about,
right,
and that resonate with us in some larger way beyond the simple transaction of getting what we're paying money for.
Right, right. And money, of course, I think of money as an energy of exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an energy. It's a we almost don't even think about it anymore. It's just we just spend our money. But people work hard for their money. We value money, and we can exert a certain level of consciousness and power, and I mean that in a good way, in the sense of powerful, empowered choice in, as you say, supporting and purchasing from the brands and patronizing the companies that we like. I know for myself that it's not always an easy thing to spend money, but if I like the person from whom I'm buying, it makes a whole different experience for me. Is that true for you personally?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. There are definitely times when I get energized by going to, say, a store that I like to patronize, like a Trader Joe's
mm-hmm.
or something. It's something that I look to not as a chore, but actually a source of exploration, a sense of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the people there will be pleasant.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get hassled. I don't need to worry about pricing because everything there represents a good value, and there will always be something a little bit adventurous for me to find.
Yes, yes, it's true. It's a great store. We may talk a little bit more about what makes them work so well. But I think that as we tune into this, we can like how we feel about ourselves when we're doing business with people and companies that we like and appreciate. And then we know that the exchange of energy is a good one, you know. So we'll explore this from a couple of viewpoints today, both ourselves, and we've already touched on them, both ourselves as the consumer and how a business treats us, but also the dynamic of the business itself and its employees. I think you refer to this as inside the company. And as you just said, you know, you walk in to Trader Joe's and the clerks and the people stocking the shelves, they're generally in good humor. They will interact nicely. That's the kind of store it's fun to shop in. So we'll explore both of those things. I think it'll be quite interesting. But, you know, there is a problem with this because, you know, honestly, you say marketing and advertising, and a lot of times people will roll their eyes and find it to be a very dry topic and feel that it's not a very humanizing experience to be marketed to. So you're a marketing expert, and do you have a sense, you know, what brought us to this point of feeling kind of dissected or analyzed as a marketing statistic, and why are some of the campaigns, well, we'll get into why some of the campaigns are as they are, but where did this all come from? What was the sort of background, and can you track a short history for us about where we started and how we ended up where we are today in a more analytical place?
Sure, sure. I'd be happy to. I think I will speak mostly about my own experience in the field of marketing, which now spans
a couple of decades, a while.
It actually spans 30 years.
Great.
So,
we go for the experts on creating a spirited life.
Right. When I was entering the field of marketing in the mid-80s, the place to be was consumer products.
Uh-huh.
And consumer packaged goods. So I was hired by Unilever at a time when we were just transitioning out of the mass market or beginning that transition. If you can think back that far, cable TV was just coming into being, and, you know, marketers felt this was the end of the world as we knew it.
Because
it used to be that everything was done to a mass audience.
Uh-huh.
And as one of my bosses once said, any idiot with $10 million could create a brand in the 1960s or 70s by using network TV.
Because people couldn't
have choices.
Jump to another channel.
Exactly. Everybody watched the same three things.
There was no mute button, so we had to listen to the commercials or stand up and turn them down.
DVRs, no TiVo.
So we were a more captive audience then, in a certain way.
And we were more, I think our tastes were shaped by that kind of homogeneity of the mass market.
Uh-huh.
But things did start to change, and they changed in the media world, where cable channels started to come in. They changed in the print world of magazines, so instead of just buying Time or Newsweek, you could also buy Country Living or Cooking Light or, you know,
Housekeeping.
Well, that had always been around, but there were these finer slices of interest that advertisers could reach more finely honed audiences. So from a consumer standpoint, it was actually quite nice because you found more relevant information that appealed to your more specific tastes.
Tastes and interests and passions.
Yes, yes. That's very true. But at the same time, what was happening is that we were beginning to understand how to work with data. And I guess we're going to be getting into that
go ahead.
But about 40 years ago, something very dramatic happened that was unheralded, and that was the, I think it was June 26, 1974, the first barcode scanning took place.
Actually know the date?
I do. I do.
On your exam for your for your master's in marketing?
No, it's something I came to discover only last year, and I gave a speech like the night before it happened. I just couldn't believe it.
Because it was such a turning point, huh?
Yeah, but who knew
at the time.
Back then?
Yeah.
And it was a 10-pack of Wrigley's Juicy Fruit gum that was scanned at a supermarket, the Marsh Supermarket in Troy, Ohio. And what happened as a result of that has been things beyond people's wildest imaginings. Back then, the barcode was invented to help grocery stores that live on very, very slender margins. And it was made to save time at checkout so that more customers could
move through the line,
and so that store clerks didn't actually have to go and count things.
How many packs of gum are left before I need to reorder?
Things. How many boxes of detergent are still on shelf and in the back room?
Right.
That was how inventory happened. But these barcodes enabled us to have data on all kinds of things, not just for grocery stores. And meanwhile, what was also happening was the explosion of the computing revolution, so that you end up with all kinds of data that you are eventually able to analyze.
Uh-huh.
And you can find what works. You can trace back and look at what happens when you did a different price, or what happens when you put on a display on the end of the aisle, et cetera. This took a while. But what happened is that as these new sources of data became available, a new cadre of masters was required, people who could manipulate
crunch
this.
Those numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And make them mean sense, make sense.
Right.
So that the marketers and the people producing the products can strategize.
Yes, and I think that business has always welcomed analytical, practical people. But generally in marketing, there was room for human insight, an understanding of the consumer. It's probably exaggerated in Mad Men, you know, this sort of gut, seat of the pants kind of flash of insight.
Right.
But there really was more room for that kind of thing. And as data became more available and the stakes grow higher as industry consolidation happened, which was also made possible or expedited by barcodes, people get more cautious because big problems if you make a mistake, the problems can be larger.
Yeah.
And so we people got more insistent on wanting to know what works and to be able to be more predictable about things.
Well, you had a wonderful little passage. Now, I should explain that, as I said in the introduction, you've written a wonderful book, which we're going to talk about as we go along here, that in essentially, I guess, is aimed for marketers to read, but it's also just as interesting, informative, I thought, and enjoyable for consumers, because I'm not a marketer, and I enjoy reading it, every word that you have in there. So,
oh, thank you so
I just
much.
Want to let listeners know that this is not just a marketing textbook at all. This is marketers should all be reading it, but it's also a very interesting and enjoyable book, and well written. But you have talked about the you know, you've given me a peek into the a look into the marketing world that tells us about how we're being approached. And you mentioned that you're taught in business school to analyze, to focus on the facts, to think logically. And I want to read this quote from the book because it just gave me this look into the marketing languaging. You said these things, the analyzing, focusing, and such. Logical thinking are good, and they fill our days as marketers. You say we can get pretty fancy with those numbers. Also, we look at the role and interplay of variables. We parse correlation versus causality. We track, compare, segment, chart, survey, slice, and dice. Numbers rule, and we can never get enough of them. Every year, new and more powerful tools help us crunch ever mightier reams of data. So I think that's a really clear sense of what the older school traditional marketing approach is. And you are offering to shift that by re-entering, bringing back in the other part of marketing, which is bringing the whole person into the market. Now, everybody always ends up talking about Apple, and Apple is the example of who has done it well and who has done it right. Even Simon Sinek, who has a book called Start With Why and a wonderful YouTube TED Talk about, which I recommend everybody watching. It's just so inspiring. He talks about starting with why. And his talk starts with an example from Apple. What is it about Apple that made us have that brought a different approach? Can you give us a couple words about that?
Well, it would be hard to limit it to a couple.
I know. Sing the praises, right?
When I was writing my book, I actually could have used examples from Apple for
everything. Wow.
Yeah. Just to hit some of the highlights, I think one of the things that Steve Jobs did different with Apple is instead of looking at what could be done sort of technically from a kind of micro standpoint, he started with an understanding of human yearnings and aspirations. And his own, one of the real turning points for him, as some people may very well know, everybody knows he didn't go to college, he dropped out of Reed College, but he ended up enrolling in this course. He audited a class on calligraphy because at Reed College the campus posters were really beautiful and he wanted to study this. So even after he had dropped out, he took this class and learned calligraphy. And as a result, when Apple was started, he used proportional fonts. He had choice of fonts. He wanted the users to be able to express themselves in richer and more beautiful ways. And this had a couple of consequences. One of them was very practical. Apple as a computer was embraced by the design and artistic and educational communities that valued these things. But it also meant that it elevated the possibilities for computers in general to embrace things like beauty.
Right.
Not just in calligraphy, but in the designs of the products.
And even the packaging. I think your book mentions the packaging that Apple uses is even artistic and elegant in
yes.
a certain way. Yeah.
It's quite fun when I go to give talks on my book. I have asked people in the audience to raise their hand if they own an Apple product
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and to keep their hand up if they still have the packaging. And usually most hands stay up. There's something just so beautiful about it that it feels wrong to throw it out.
Well, so Apple and these brands that you are teaching us about through your book, let's just make sure that it's clear that your book and the material that you offer, your platform, is about embracing that whole person. And so the artistry that you describe, the beauty, these are both aspects in your book that you talk about, because these are the right brain sides of the right side of the brain aspects that are missing from this left brain analysis. So we're going to be talking more about this as we go along, because I want to get into the specifics of your book in our next segment in a few minutes, because you really want us to be seen as a whole person with a body, mind, and spirit in the marketing world, and an intelligence, an artistic sensibility for our integrity to be intact through the marketing. I mean, it's not always intact. There to be discernment and sensitivity. So all of these things to me speak to the right side of the brain and create us as a whole, and that's where we're going. So stay tuned for the second segment when we will hear the specifics that Tracy has brought forth in her book and go on from there. So thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Join us on Creating a Spirited Life with Janet Kesenick the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. We'll explore the day-to-day moments that puzzle, enlighten, and bring us into deeper connection with our best selves. Find meaning, purpose, and humor while creating a spirited life. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Are you ready to be healthier and more effective in your life? Janet Kesenick of Spiral Energies can help you find the vitality, well-being, and self-awareness that will empower you in your life, relationships, and work. Janet offers healing treatments and intuitive readings in person and by phone or email. Sign up to learn about workshops, trainings, and to receive free inspirational writings. Contact Janet Kesenick at spiralenergies.com or by calling 617-926-4155. That's spiralenergies.com. Begin your transformation today.
Invite the Kids for Love Project, an enrichment program, into your school, classroom, or wellness center. Kids for Love Project is focused on teaching kids unconditional love for self and others. The project is a journey into self-discovery. It consists of fun, creative tools to learn self-love, like I choose love, I am love, I stand in love, and utilizing one's energies with reconnective healing and tuning into one's intuition for inner guidance, plus connecting to our natural surroundings. Kids who hold love for self do not bully or harm others. Let's cultivate a kinder world that holds compassion for all. Teaching the power of love to our kids is the way. To learn more or to bring Kids for Love Project to your school, contact Deborah Beauvais, 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to our Kids for Love Project on Facebook.
Join the Mind Health Coach with Leah Marie every fourth Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Come explore with us natural and healthy ways to achieve inner peace, happiness, and an ever-present state of well-being. You're already healed. You just haven't realized it yet. When you're ready, you can change your mind and change your life forever. The power of a beautiful life is within you today.
Mind Health Coach with Leah Marie is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Ever feel like you're getting in your own way? Want your life to flow effortlessly? Ready to step into the fullness of who you really are? Spiral Energies can help you transform your life and manifest your highest potential so you can live a deep, rich existence. Contact Janet Kesenick at spiralenergies.com or by calling 617-926-4155. That's spiralenergies.com. 617-926-4155. Begin your transformation today.
A Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Boston. I'm Janet Kesenick, and this is Creating a Spirited Life, where I am here today with marketing expert and author Tracy Carlson. She's the author of a book called What Great Brands Know, Unleash Your Right Brain Genius. Sorry, Tracy. Unleash Your Right Brain Genius to Stand Out and Make Customers Care. So this is really the call to action for the marketers. This is how to do it, and it's a beautiful book. We're taking a look at ourselves today as spiritual beings who are out in the world as consumers and reconciling how that lines up for us in a satisfying way and how it doesn't always line up. So we all probably have stories of being in situations where we feel pressured, where we feel manipulated. I think my least favorite place is being in the car dealership. It's the hardest place for me to stay grounded and such. But, you know, all the commercials that we watch also can, you know, just feel like we are not being well respected or that there is really good integrity in what is being promoted. But Tracy, your book is offering some solutions to that, and it's an important book for marketers and also for consumers because as consumers, the more this is on our radar, the more we can vote with our feet, you know, what stores do we patronize, vote with our dollars, how do we spend them. So you're on a mission, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. This is missionary work. One of the things that I've been so discouraged by across the course of my marketing career is that real people and the things that make us most uniquely human have been squeezed out as this left brain analytical approach, which has a place.
Absolutely.
But it has displaced a sense of treating people as whole, interesting, contradictory, quirky,
spiritual,
artistic beings.
Clever beings.
Right. Yeah. And it's just gotten to the point where we as consumers feel like marionettes whose strings are being pulled in ever more finite ways.
Right.
And one of the things that I've been very gratified about with my book is that non-marketers have read it and enjoyed it because in part what it is you can recognize what's missing and why you feel good about certain companies, certain brands, where you feel that there's some kind of human and spiritual connection, where there's resonance.
Mm.
What is that all about?
Yeah.
And so for consumers who are interested in why the world of business feels so stale and sterile, it can be interesting for
and
for
fragmented
people.
And yeah,
absolutely,
yeah,
right.
Well, and I fully appreciate how enjoyable the book is to look at and read. For a book about marketing, there's a wonderful, refreshingly few amount of charts and tables and statistics, and it's cleverly illustrated and well laid out and full of interesting quotes. I could have pulled, you know, all of those quotes out. So I really do want to encourage people, everybody, to read it. This is not just for not just for business people. And one of the things that drew me to have you on the show is that your table of contents alone really reads like a formula and a blueprint for my messages around a spirited life in a certain way. You touch on some of my favorite words, in fact. So I'm just going to quickly read the highlights of the table for contents. You have a wonderful alphabet of A through F. And here we go. A is for art, and this includes three bullet points for each one: beauty, craftsmanship, and the arts. B is for balance, harmony, one of my favorite words, equanimity, zagging. Now, that one I'm not as familiar with from the spiritual world, but I'm sure you can explain that. C is for connecting. There's an important word, and that's a word that I know that Seth Godin, one of the entrepreneurial business folks, uses that word. He's very aware that that's the word. That's the quality we need. Connecting, which includes synthesis, association, and intuition, one of my faves. D is for depth, essence, multidimensionality, and roots. All three of those are very energetic words in my book. E is for emotion, attunement, empathy, and engagement. And F is for fun, joviality, enjoyment, and play. So these are the qualities. Talk briefly. This is what you feel we need to reincorporate into marketing. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think these are the kinds of things that make us human, not just wallets, and where there is the possibility of developing relationships instead of just having things be about transactions. And I'm excited to sense that there's a bit more interest in this in the marketplace. I think consumers are becoming more conscious. They're becoming more aware of what companies are doing and mm-hmm. where they want to devote their resources. I think that the younger generation of workers is being, to the extent that they have options, is looking for places that value them more as whole people.
Right.
And
those are some of the companies from the inside.
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
The insiders, yeah. And you mentioned in your introduction, I think, that, you know, we're looking for brands that aren't just thinking creatively. I mean, that's a lot of fun. But approaching the customer holistically and even, you say, changing people's lives. And that's what we say about Apple, and that's what Simon Sinek says about you know, the ultimate point is how is this product going to make your life better at a higher vibrational level? Something. But, you know, this is to change people's lives. It's
yes.
to be of help, right?
One of the things that I was just amazed by in the outpouring of affection and grief when Steve Jobs died, I had a couple of friends who wanted and felt motivated to write a note to his widow, just saying how much he meant to them and how much Apple meant to them. And one of them has never owned an Apple product.
Wow.
There's just something about it and him being in the world.
Yeah. Well, let's spend, we've talked a little bit about the left brain, but give me, you know, a two-sentence, well, that's too short, a short diagnosis of the right brain, the left brain and the right brain, just their strengths, because you had some good words there from the book that that I was using. You called the left brain strengths, I love this, the analytical whiz kid, right? Linear, sequential, logical, and creates and gives us a sense of control in a complex world. So the left brain has a tremendous value for us, right? And the right brain, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's absolutely true. The right brain is where the left brain is all about analysis and dealing with what is sort of isolated and static. It's about creating systems and categories and quantifying and metrics, which is great, especially in a world drowning with data. But there's a wonderful a book by a psychiatrist and brain researcher, Ian McGilchrist. It's a big book, but you can find a wonderful 11-minute video online that talks about the differences between the left brain and the right brain. And one of the things about the left brain is it's trying to control the world, whereas the right brain is trying to understand the world.
Make sense of the world. Create the why,
exactly,
as Simon Sinek says. Yeah.
Where the left brain is looking at very narrowly at things in a fixed way, the right brain has more expansive, open attention, where the left brain is focused on what's lifeless.
Mm-hmm.
The right brain is concerned with embodied beings, like people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And where the left brain cares about abstractions and things that don't change, the right brain is looking at the things that are dynamic and interchanging. And let's face it, our world is one that is constantly changing,
right,
where the pieces work together.
Yeah. And we are a whole person because we are a whole brain. So as you said, two halves of a whole work best when they work together. And we need both and both and is certainly, to me, a spiritual teaching that we're looking at all times. So we need both of these, but we are certainly missing some of the context and symbolic meaning and emotionality that the right brain can bring. So let's talk about a couple of these wonderful approaches that you want to bring in. Let's talk about C is for connecting. You say connecting is about tuning into inner sensations and perceptions. And you tell a story about the Ben & Jerry's marketing success. Do you remember? Can you pull that out? And
yes. The aspect of connecting that I think Ben & Jerry's does a great job of is what I call association. And that means bringing together disparate entities or ideas that you just wouldn't normally think of as going together. But Ben & Jerry's did that in their flavors by connecting.
Yeah, the names that they created, right?
They would connect a flavor with some pop cultural phenomenon.
Right. What was the Stephen Colbert, American...
I can't remember that
with something
one,
with the American something or other, and then there was the
Cherry Garcia,
yes,
you know,
from
the Grateful Dead or Fish Food,
and the Chubby Hubby, which
that is an interesting one because there they have a mashup of ingredients that you would just, I mean, these days it's not
So unusual. But it was they were the innovators then. Instead of mint chocolate chip being the fanciest ice cream flavor you could get, they really started the innovation of these, putting these flavors together. Or they got they were one of the creators, I think.
Yes. So this quirky kind of combination of things that you wouldn't expect is...
And also, they had, when they renamed, well, they had the Chubby Hubby, you said, and then they ran a little program for it when, was it Vermont?
Vermont.
Legalized same-sex marriage, and they called it, for a little while, they called it Hubby Hubby.
Yes. And what's interesting is that even though Unilever, the humongous multinational giant, bought them, they let them stay somewhat independent so they could do things like that.
Wonderful. Well, so much more to look into. We'll be back in a few minutes, and stay tuned to Creating a Spirited Life. I'm here with Tracy Carlson today. Thank you.
Join us on Creating a Spirited Life with Janet Kesenick the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. We'll explore the day-to-day moments that puzzle, enlighten, and bring us into deeper connection with our best selves. Find meaning, purpose, and humor while creating a spirited life. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Are you ready to be healthier and more effective in your life? Janet Kesenek of Spiral Energies can help you find the vitality, well-being, and self-awareness that will empower you in your life, relationships, and work. Janet offers healing treatments and intuitive readings in person and by phone or email. Sign up to learn about workshops, trainings, and to receive free inspirational writings. Contact Janet Kesenek at spiralenergies.com or by calling 617-926-4155. That's spiralenergies.com. Begin your transformation today. Life. We can either be bystanders or creators. Now is the time to awaken to your divine identity and the power of the I Am within to create a joyous and fulfilled life, no matter what your circumstances are. There are answers to life's big questions, and there is a spiritual path that leads to soul liberation and ascension. Join us every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Prophets for the New Age with Carl and Nancy Showalter on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Ever feel like you're getting in your own way? Want your life to flow effortlessly? Ready to step into the fullness of who you really are? Spiral Energies can help you transform your life and manifest your highest potential so you can live a deep, rich existence. Contact Janet Kesenek at spiralenergies.com or by calling 617-926-4155. That's spiralenergies.com. 617-926-4155. Begin your transformation today.
Thanks for staying tuned to Creating a Spirited Life. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Boston. I'm Janet Kesenek here with marketing expert and author Tracy Carlson. We're talking about the consumer as a whole person out in the marketplace and thinking about the various aspects that create a marketing campaign and a consumer experience that help us stay in a place of feeling like a whole person rather than a number and a statistic. We mentioned a moment ago Seth Godin, Tracy, who did a really worthwhile to listen to interview on the radio show On Being with Krista Tippett. This is a public radio station show that I recommend listening to. He's a thought leader and entrepreneur, and in listening to his show about marketing and about the world, some words that came out included ethical, you know, and we need to be ethical and have good integrity in our marketing experience. And he mentioned that, you know, we're looking for that which is genuine because that is what connects us versus something which is fake that entertains us. Now, entertaining, I mean, we can be well entertained and have a lot of fun with it and feel it grounded in good roots, right?
It's absolutely
not at all necessarily fake or gratuitous, but it's the gratuitous humor or where you feel like somebody's trying too hard that doesn't feel well grounded. Fun and joviality, as you describe in your story and in your book, certainly there's a tremendous place for that. Commercials that make us laugh or experiences that make us laugh, consumer experiences that make us laugh from a good place within ourselves are a lot of fun. I loved your story about Southwest Airlines, where they're known for having this great, almost a stand-up routine as they talk through all of the things that people have to know at the beginning of the flight. You know, here's your oxygen mask and this and that. And what was the story? Someone.
This was a great story where a blogger had been on a flight where the main flight attendant who made the in-cabin announcements had practically done a stand-up routine throughout the
flight.
Throughout the flight, and the author was reflecting on how enjoyable it had been and how great an airline Southwest is. And it was just as he was pulling up to his arrival gate that he realized he had been on American Airlines.
But he had associated
the... Exactly. The idea of fun and playfulness and what I
smart
call
humor.
Joviality is so intrinsically linked with the Southwest brand that...
He just forgot he wasn't on there. So that was such a strong association. I think that's an amazing... statement of support for that, isn't it? Now, we were talking about this aspect of being inside the store and the employees that work there, ourselves as consumers, and the both and of that is really a story that comes out here from the Boston area in the whole Market Basket supermarket recent story in which, see, there was a conflict in the leadership.
This is
quite a big story, as I recall. And
this is a remarkable story, and I'll try to recap it very quickly for people who aren't familiar with it, although it did end up making national and even international news.
Wow.
Basically, this family-run business with two factions. There was a shift in the... one person who had a small minority share shifted her allegiance, and so... one of the leaders of the companies, Arthur T. Demoulas, was going to be ousted.
Mm.
And he's somebody who was beloved by his employees and had really stood up for them. People were essentially lifetime employees. He treats people very well.
So this is a good insider's company.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
There were he knew people's birthdays. He knew everyone in this company that employs
thousands of
people.
So they felt known, and they felt like a whole person.
Right.
He probably knew when, you know, somebody's daughter was graduating from high school, or, I mean...
He'd been to a lot of weddings and funerals. And then when he was being pushed out by the other side of the family that basically wanted more money, although he had actually worked in the business for 40 years, and they hadn't, from my... understanding, something remarkable happened, and his employees went on strike.
Mm.
And they galvanized shoppers as well to boycott Market Basket until Arthur T. Demoulas was restored,
reinstated
as CEO. This was something that the chain had 70-some stores, and... operations ground to a halt. Even suppliers stopped supplying the supermarket under this new regime.
I know there were pictures in the newspaper of the empty shelves and
even two governors got involved.
Wow.
And ultimately, what happened is that he was reinstated. He was able to buy, the other side of the family agreed for him to buy them out.
Wow.
And
it's an amazing story. And it went on for a long time.
It
was not a
week
and a half. A good while.
And what is remarkable, too, is that, you know, here employees were standing up to return their multimillionaire CEO to power.
Wow. And I remember a friend of mine, I don't have a Market Basket close to me, so I don't shop there, but I have a friend who regularly went. And as soon as the store opened again, he had been at my house that afternoon, and he said, "Oh, I'm heading over to Market Basket. I just can't wait to get back to the store. And I want to see all my friends there, all the clerks and all the people that I've missed seeing them." So there you have it. I mean, that's what we're looking for, right?
Right. And when you go, and the Market Basket experience is a pretty bare bones one. They don't do they don't even have a website, or at least they hadn't before all this. But what they did have was they had good prices, and they had great people.
Yeah, and people who were happy working there.
Yes.
We've all walked in stores where the atmosphere is tense, and the employee, it's not just one employee having a bad day, but you just feel like there's, you know, a tension there, and it's a tough place to work. I mean, that, and then that makes it a tough place to shop. So
right.
It's really, really, it's no wonder that we respond to the Trader Joe's and the Market Baskets and the stores where we feel comfortable and confident in the experience that we have.
And as you say, there's a certain kind of energy to the atmosphere as well. You can
right.
tell.
Right. You can feel like you can be yourself, and other people are being themselves. They're not being their brand, you know?
Right.
It's
right.
so interesting. Well, we always love in marketing to take a peek at the Super Bowl commercials that we just had the Super Bowl recently. So I know I watched the commercials very carefully this year because I had a friend who was who's an actress who was going to be in one of them. So I was watching to try and see. So I really paid attention to them. Plus, we were going to be doing our show, and many of them had the, you know, gratuitous animals and this and that that didn't make a lot of sense to me and goofiness. But was there a Dove ad for men that...
Yes. Overall, I would say that the Super Bowl commercials were a bit better this year. There was less snark. There was less overt sexism. And there were a few commercials that I felt stood out. The Dove for men ad was about fathers. It was all about little kids saying daddy, not just little kids,
right.
Even
kids of all ages.
Kids
yeah.
of old age, all ages, and that caring is part of strength
yes.
for men. And that, I think, is a really wonderful aspect of wholeness that Dove is able to bring out, and it's able to bring out credibly because of what they've done with the Dove brand overall. And full disclosure, I used to run it many years ago.
That's so cool.
But what I think we experience is just as the depictions of women in the media and advertising are so narrow, it's also true for men. You have certain tired stereotypes, whether it's the horny frat boy or the aspiring, you know, ruthless tycoon businessman or dumb dad.
Right.
There isn't a lot of recognition for the wholeness that we bring to our lives.
I've found that too on TV shows and things, that the men are portrayed as such idiots. It's very tiring. They're not seen as whole people, and so this ad really was an attempt, I think, to recognize the male as a whole person.
Yes, and even though
Real relationships, you know.
Right, right, and even though it's women who are making most of the purchasing decisions, and they're probably the ones picking up the Dove at Target or at CVS or the supermarket. I think it's those kinds of advertising help with our expand the idea of whole people within our consumer culture.
Right. Right. Well, that's the name of the game, the whole person in the consumer culture. And so, you know, let's have a little call to action here. Conscious choice, that we can be conscious consumers, right? That's
absolutely
that's our term.
Our feet
yeah.
and money.
We have power to support the brands and businesses that treat us like people, and so let's be conscious, holistic consumers in the marketplace. That's our aim. Tracy, I thank you so very much for being with me today. It's been a real pleasure, and I have enjoyed this tremendously.
Thank you so much, Janet. It was a real pleasure for me as well. Thank you for inviting me.
Creating a Spirited Life will be back next month, as always, on the third Sunday of the month at 8 p.m., which will be March 15th. And I look forward to being back with you all then. Many blessings. Take good care.
Thank you. spirited life happens moment by moment, one experience at a time. With the right perspective, each encounter is meaningful, brings purpose and satisfaction, and moves us on the path toward the life we're meant to live. Join Janet Kesenick for Creating a Spirited Life every third Sunday of the month at 8 p.m. Learn more by finding Janet on Facebook and on her website, spiralenergies.com. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.